between the life we see and the world we dream, there are stories when they are told. Nightmares become imagination. So please.
Thomas, you aren't.
Hello to the guild. Is it just me, or are mistakes happening more frequently? Welcome to the Dim Light Anxiety Podcast. I am your host, Giggles, and let me tell you, I am deep into my master's program, and I am chock full of anxiety. It's not due to the program, however. I feel like I am doing great there, but for that reason, everything else feels like it has chosen to fall apart. My car's engine light went on this morning, and now does a little jump when moving into or out of second. That feels like an expensive problem, and I literally have no money right now. I have mostly been living off of credit for months now. Then, someone I am helping for my job is failing. They're succeeding, but they're still failing, which feels like it's all my fault. I know that it isn't completely on me, but damn. Now, I am not sure if today's episode is going to get out on time because I was going to record last night when my upstairs neighbors triggered a PTSD flashback. Super fun. Didn't completely knock out my drive at all. I didn't freak out, I swear. Anyway, on top of all this, I don't have time to write my scary stories, which you have heard me say before is the best outlet for anxiety. Fuck. I bet if I had the time, I could write some really, really scary shit with all these layers of guilt and anxiety built up. I mean, damn. Oh, a girl can nightmare. And we all know that nightmares are a terrible thing to waste. From campy to, I had a dream last night, a textbook was eating me. Scary. I want to hear them all because your fucked up brains came up with them. That leaves us with one very important question. What's your story? Once crafted, email them to dimlightanxiety@gmail.com. I am dying to pick your brain. But for now, we have the continuation of last month's story. You guys, I am in love with performing this main character. She's so great. Before we start, though, let's have a bit of a reminder where we left off. Heart knocking, I leaned over and realized it was just a book. A book bound in cracked skin-colored leather. The face twisted, features and mouth open in a frozen scream of agony was slightly raised. Like an image in a macabre pop-up book, shadows seethed in its gaping eyes, and it was just creepy, okay? My sister eyed the pages warily. She was a history geek and a book lover, so she couldn't pass this up even if she wanted to. Just scanned the words and muttered to herself. Yes, she said absently. It says, he who owns this book shall wield the power of the infernal one. She trailed off and looked like she was going to be sick. I don't like this, she said quickly and snapped. The cover closed. Today's story is written by the terrorific author you can find on Reddit under the username JRubus. There are days you do everything right, and then there are days that you accidentally wake the dead. Submitted for the approval of the Guild with Dim Light Anxiety, I call this story The Tale of Waking the Dead, part two. Titled, Whoops, I Woke the Dead, Chapter 2 and part of Chapter 3. Mondays, believe it or not, are one of my easier days. I'm off Sunday and usually collapse from the week's accumulated exhaustion before 10. I wake up the next morning at 6 bright-eyed and bushy-tailed and, for a few hours, until math spoils my mood, anything is possible. October 30th, I woke to the sound of the rain 10 minutes before my alarm was set to go off. Jesse was already up and dressed in a sweater and slacks. Get this, she was folding laundry. "What are you doing?" I asked and sat up. "Putting my clothes away." She said it like folding laundry at 5:50 a.m. was the most normal thing in the world. "This early?" "Yes, this early," Jess shot back. She scanned the room and frowned. "And before we leave, you need to pick up the yuck you call your half of the room." "Poof, yuck? Why, there's not even clothes, shoes, and dirty underwear were strewn across the floor. "Oh, I could have sworn I cleaned this yesterday." "Fine," I said and flopped my head back against my pillow. My motivation tanked and suddenly anything wasn't possible. Jess finished up and sailed out of the room and I sat up. Might as well get this over with. I hurried, picked up my clothes, crammed them into my overflowing hamper and dressed in jeans and a black hoodie over a white t-shirt. Water streaked the window pane and hissed in the street. It was going to be a long walk to school. Unless. I grabbed my book bag and went to the kitchen. Jess leaned against the counter and munched sparingly on a granola bar like a cute woodland critter. And Dad sat at the table with the post in front of his face. "Hey," I said and sat across from them. You're looking less lame than usual today." He regarded me suspiciously over the top of the paper, braced for anything.
"What do you want?"
"A ride to school?" I smiled prettily. Instead of,
"Sure, Alex, whatever you want, hon."
He stared daggers at me, and I started to squirm.
"Yeah," he said wryly, "because I was totally going to get my teenage daughters to walk in the pouring rain. That's exactly something I'd do. Glad you think so highly of me."
And here we go. "Never mind, I'd rather walk." I started to get up, but he stopped me.
"Leave the house without me, and you're grounded."
The twinkle in his eyes told me he was playing. But I didn't want to take any chances. Tomorrow was Halloween, and I was not going to risk missing it. "You're the boss," I said and parked my butt.
"Actually, your mom's the boss," he said and snapped the paper with a flourish. "I'm just middle management."
"Hey, like Pat." "No wonder you throw your weight around," I leaned back in my chair. "It's always the lowest guy in the power structure who abuses his power." Dad snorted.
"What dumbass told you that?"
"You." He didn't say anything to that. Since I had some time to spare, I decided to have a spot of breakfast. "Hey, Jess," I said over my shoulder. "Throw me one of those granola bars, will you?" Jessly swallowed. "Get it yourself." "Oh, come on," I put on my saddest puppy dog face. "Nope, not falling for it." Darn, I had to bring out the big guns. Thrusting my bottom lip, I worked up just enough tears to sparkle.
But sisters,
she darted her eyes to me and then away, her jaw clenching with determination. "I won't cave this time," her expression said. She made the grave mistake of meeting my gaze. I quivered my lip.
Please. Sighing, she broke like a weightlifter's legs, went to the pantry, and grabbed a bar. She tossed it underhand, and leaning on the side, I snatched it. My left butt cheek started to slip, and my balance upset. With a high wavering, whoa, I tipped. But I threw out my arm and slapped my hand on the floor at the last second, saving myself from certain death. Nice throw, but I gotta deduct points because that landing was a little shaky. That's your fault. No, it's yours, I ripped open the wrapper. The thrower is responsible for how the catcher catches. Didn't you know? It's like a rule of every sport. Tad snorted. You're full of it. Yeah, full of knowledge. Jess rolled her eyes and left the room, probably to do a quick dust mop and vacuum before we left. I dug into my bar. It had dried cranberries in it. Yum! Across from me, Dad went through the motions of his daily morning ritual. Turns page. Damn liberals. Turns next page. Damn conservatives. It happens like this every day. Don't you like anyone? I asked, spraying food. I like your mom. I couldn't tell if he was being serious or insulting me, but you usually can't with him. She's not a politician. That's why I like her. When he was done belly aching about Republicans and Democrats, we piled into his 2009 Focus and lit out for school. Jess in the back and me riding shotgun. Oldest always gets shotgun, even if the youngest calls it. Dirty rainwater swished through the street gutters, carrying leaves and twigs into the dark open drains. We all float down here, Jess. Dad turned onto Schoolhouse Road and braked to let an old woman pushing a cart pass. A half mile later, Pickett's Mead High appeared from the mist like a ship at sea. A big, blocky, ugly ship with a covered breezeway, a courtyard, and a higher-than-usual dropout rate. Kids streamed from buses idling at the curb, and Principal Raid and the Vice Principal Warno stood by the door, glaring at their charges like a couple of serial killers. He was balding with glasses, and she a bit ugly with blonde hair. I call them the gruesome twosome. Mom calls them something a wee bit stronger that starts with an A and ends with souls. That's like the one thing we agree on. Pulling over, Dad put the car in park and just flung her door open. Bye, she said and climbed out.
Bye.
I started to get out too.
Hey.
I looked at him. And for a moment, we stared each other down like two gunslingers ready to draw. Then he tapped his cheek. Where I come from? That means free shot, so I knocked his ass out and left. Not really. I leaned in and kissed his cheek.
There, he said. Love you.
Love you too. Getting out into the damp chill, I flipped my hood up, grabbed my backpack, and hurried across the street. Inside the main lobby, the floor was slick and peppered with dead leaves. The office was to the right, behind a glass partition, and the gym was to the left, the doors standing open. The hallway lined with lockers stretched to the cafeteria and across hall, east to west from one end of the building to the other. At my locker, I put in the combination 39, 42, 36. And grabbed my history book. I slammed the door just as my bestie Kyra walked up. Kyra's a Visco girl, which is like a valley girl mixed with a vegan, I think. She wears oversized t-shirts, scrunchies around both wrists, flip-flops in every weather, except snow, and rocks a puka shell choker. I know. I'm embarrassed to be seen with her too sometimes, but we've known each other since kindergarten. I wasn't as awesome back then, and my first day, I was really nervous.
Paris noticed and she asked me to play with her.
And we've been best friends through it all.
Hey,
she said and opened her locker. Her voice was perky, upbeat, and not gonna lie, annoying. Today she wore a gray t-shirt that almost reached her knees, flipper floppers, and her dirty blonde hair with a messy bun that sat on top of her head like a giant spider. Hey, I said, trying really hard not to stare, but staring anyway. She took a drink from her hydro flask, lime green, yuck, and exchanged it for a science book.
Ready for the big math test?
Ugh, I forgot about that. No, I said and hung my head.
That's okay, I totes believe in you.
She glanced down at my hand, and her neck muscles started to strain like the guy in the meme. Uh-oh. No, I forestalled. Her face turned red. Not happening.
Just one, okay?
She begged. I don't know if all Visco girls do this, but Kyra gives scrunchies and metal straws to everyone. She's like Johnny Appleseed or something. Hey, Johnny Visco Seed, I gotta write that down. Anyway, if she spotted my naked wrist, her visco senses tingled, and she couldn't be happy until it was clothed with a totes cute scrunchie. Oh, God help you if she saw you drinking out of a plastic bottle.
Oh, my God, that's really bad for the environment. Here, have a hydro flask. Save the turtles.
No, I said, I'm not a visco girl. I'm an Alex girl. She threw her head back.
But I have one that would look so cute on you.
She reached into her gigantic tote bag with Save the Whales embroidered across the front, and I took the opportunity to escape. I can be pretty quick when I want to be. If you ever been to high school, you know what it's like. So I'll spare you the boring details. At lunch, I stood in line, got my tray, and sat across from Kyra and her friends, Valerie and Harper. They were talking about Brenner's Halloween party when I rolled up and jumped right in.
I can't wait. You guys know what you're going to be? Valerie beamed.
I'm going to be a slutty nurse.
Yuck. Okay.
I'm going to be a slutty clown, Harper said.
Okay, hold up. A slutty clown? I asked.
How do you do that?
Grinning like it was her first time to shine, she said, you wear makeup, a big red nose, and not much else.
Kyra covered her hand to stifle her visco giggle. No, I get the concept, but clowns aren't sexy. You'll look dumb. Her jaw dropped.
No, I won't.
Yes, you will.
No, I won't.
She upended her hydro flask and sighed.
Ah, refreshing. What are you going as?
Even though I haven't mentioned it once in our story, I put a lot of thought into my costume. Last year I went as Gene Simmons from Kiss, complete with cape, makeup, and platform boots. This time around, I wanted something a little simpler. A witch.
A slutty witch? Harper asked.
No, a normal witch. Harper nodded, patronizing.
Oh.
Yeah, well, Alex isn't dressing like a thought. What a loser, right? You know, it might not be hip to say this, but I think women and girls should accentuate their minds and personalities instead of their bodies. Sometimes I see girls wearing shorts that are super tiny.
Oh, but it's hot out.
Yeah, I get hot too, but I never have been that hot. If you want to dress that way, fine, but
I personally prefer to let the imagination do most of the work. I didn't want to be a stick in the mud like my mom, so I didn't say any of that. I just blew a raspberry and waved them off. Across the cafeteria, Tim waited in line. Ooh, QT at 9 o'clock. Elsewhere, Jesse and Mark sat across from each other, Jesse smiling and prattling about something lame, no doubt. Tim got his tray and came over, and my heart fluttered. It always does when I see him. Hey, I said.
Hey.
He sat down next to me and we kissed.
Not with tongue, though.
We do that sometimes, but not in public.
You look nice today.
In jeans, a hoodie, and a red Chuck Taylor All-Stars. I looked like I always did. But I blushed anyway. Thanks, you too. Kyra, Valerie, and literally everything else faded until Tim was the only thing left in the world. Soft brown eyes, cocky smile, cute dimples. In my native tongue, we call guys like him muy caliente.
I might have missed you, he said.
He took my hand and threaded our fingers together.
Yeah, I might have missed you too.
How'd you do on the math test?
Good,
he said. Well,
I think.
Tim's dad owns an auto body shop. Did I already mention that? And Tim helps him in the afternoons, so he uses a lot of math.
You?
Tim asked. I laughed.
I bombed. Really?
Nah, I did okay. I took his roll off his tray and took a bite. He cocked an admonishing brow and I giggled like a little girl. What?
I was gonna eat that.
So?
Now I don't have one.
Tough shit. He pursed his lips and nodded to himself. I should have seen that coming. Since I'm not a monster, I broke a piece off and shoved it in his mouth. His cheeks puffed out like a squirrel as he gagged. Lightweight. 10 minutes later, the bell rang, and we were forced apart. I know it's really early to say something like this, but being around Tim, I get why people marry each other. I used to think it was a formality couples underwent just because... But now I see it for what it is. You marry your best guy or girl because when you aren't with them, you aren't complete. Your heart and soul cry out for them and you're dazed out of sorts until they come back. I'm not saying I'll marry Tim one day, but I mean, I'm only 16 and we've been together like 6 months. But, you know, maybe, possibly. Head in the clouds, I went to my next class, totally unaware that in just 24 hours, my life was going to be thrown into chaos. Tuesday, October 31st, dawn clear, bright, and a wee bit nippy. The previous night, me, Dad, and Jess stayed up watching Halloween movies on AMC. Me munching popcorn and Jess peeking through her fingers just because, horror movies scare me, Jess, God, I love her, is the biggest baby in the world when it comes to stuff like that. When she sees a little girl, Monster House, scared the bejeebus out of her, and she could barely make it through Mostly Ghostly, Who Let the Ghosts Out, in an effort to put some hair on her chest, as Dad might say,
I make her watch scary movies with me sometimes. We saw Get Out at the Palace, the theater downtown, and I'm proud to say she only cowered for half of it. Progress! Anyway, I got up with my alarm, giddy like a kid on Christmas, caught a shower, and went into the kitchen. Mom dressed in a gray shirt and a matching blazer over white blouse. She stood at the counter pouring sugar into a cup of coffee. Her hair was pulled back in a lame-tastic bun when she glanced at me. Her eyes were hazy and unfocused with fatigue. Morning, I sang and grabbed a mug from the drying rack. Morning. She brought the cup to her lips, blew away a curl of steam, and took a tentative sip. Is that your costume? I grinned. Yeah, part of it. Part of it was a long black dress with a ragged hem on top of my normal clothes. Last night after dinner, I drilled a hole in a plastic skull and threaded twine through it. It hung around my neck like a morbid piece of bling. My witch hat was still sitting on my dresser. Mom hummed judgmentally. What? I asked. Nothing. I just expected something a little more. She waved her hands. Elaborate. I added cream and sugar. I wanted to get back to the basics this year. After she was gone, I finished my coffee and went to get my hat. Jesse stood in front of the full-length mirror on the back of the closet door and looked at her reflection over her shoulder. Dressed in a skirt and blazer, much like Mom's, she wore glasses with no lenses because she'd be blinded otherwise. And her hair was in a pragmatic bun, also like Mom's. Can you guess what she was supposed to be? Hey, Teach, I said and grabbed my hat. Last night, Jess and I carved jack-o'-lanterns in the kitchen table. Mine sat on my nightstand, the candle within filling it with flickering light. Yes, I slept with the lit pumpkin on my nightstand last night. I also put my earbuds in and listened to my Halloween playlist on my phone. Like I said, I'm a pretty big Halloween buff. I dropped onto the edge of the bed and blew out the candle. How are people going to know you're supposed to be a teacher? I asked. Jess, still studying herself, said, I have an apple. So, teachers eat apples. So do librarians. You could easily pass for one of those. Finished, Jess sat at her desk and pulled her heels on. True, but I think people will get it. I don't know. People can be kind of dense. An idea struck me, and I reached into my nightstand and grabbed something. I got just the thing, and I went over to her. What? Jess asked. I held it up. A number two pencil. This. I bent over and Jess stiffened. I jammed the end lengthwise into her bun, wiggled it to make sure it was stuck fast, and stepped back to admire my handiwork. There. Just turned her head to the side and the pencil stayed. How do I look? Maybe it was my imagination, but she sounded anxious, like a little girl worrying over her first day of school. My maternal instincts triggered, and the urge to sweep my baby sister into the biggest, beariest hugs came over me. There, Jess. You look great. In fact, you look as awesome as me. Jess laughed. I doubt I look that awesome. Sure you do, I pinched her cheek. Alex Jr. She pulled away, laughed, and swatted my hand. Stop! That hurts. Oh, you'll live. I pulled my hat on and grabbed my backpack. Now come on. Outside, a needling breeze washed over us as I shuddered. I considered going back in for my jacket, but if I covered up my costume, people wouldn't get the full effect. Sometimes you gotta suffer for your art. Wind blew sheets of leaves across the street, and the swaying trees whispered dark secrets to each other. Or maybe juicy gossip, I don't know. I speak tree like I speak Spanish. You're coming to the party tonight, right? Jess' thumbs thrust through the straps of her backpack like a dork hunched against the wind, her cheeks already red from the cold. I don't know. Crowds. Make you nervous, I know. You handled school, though. She shrugged one shoulder. That's different. I really don't want to be around alcohol or anything, so probably not. Jess, there's not going to be any booze there. It's a community party. I don't think booze is allowed. She scrunched her lips and thought, you should come. I batted my eyelashes like the evil temptress I am. You can hang out with Mark. I don't know. I'll think about it. We turned into Schoolhouse Road. The trees were burned like torches, and awesome fall decorations adorned all the houses along the way. Jack-o'-lanterns blushing, happy scarecrows, plastic skeletons dangling from branches like condemned men hanged by the state. A crooked row of foam gravestones marched across some lawn here, and a fake spider web fluttered in the boughs of the pine tree. You'll have fun, I promise. Maybe. Come on, Jess, have I ever lied to you? Actually, don't answer that. I get the feeling that I may have once or twice. In the lobby, Jess went left and I went right. I grabbed my things from my locker. Kyra stood next to hers with her iPhone glued to her ear. Oh my God, like totally. I have given that girl so many scrunchies and she keeps losing them. Her eyes went to my bare wrist and her pupils dilated like a shark scenting blood. See ya. In class, I sat in my normal spot at the very back of the room. I could still be a good noodle from back here, guys, I swear. And stared at the trees through the window. Curlish excitement crackled through me, and sitting still was impossible. In just a few hours, I'd be at the party bobbing for apples, eating candy, jumping out of the dark corners and scaring Jess silly. Ah, I couldn't wait. At lunch, I dropped into the empty seat next to Tim and nudged him in the ribs with my elbow. He grimaced in pain and rubbed his side. Oh, I didn't even do it that hard. Stop being a baby. Felt like a gunshot, he said. You're just weak, I dismissed. You're just bony. You're a sissy, I grinned. You lack testicular fortitude. He looked at me. I looked at him. Then we laughed. Testicular fortitude, huh? He asked and opened his milk. I've never heard that one. LOL, I know. He sighed and like a gullible goof, realizing he just walked into another prank and took a long drink to buy himself some time. Your mother, he said. Oh, low blow, I said and picked up my fork. That means you've got nothing better, therefore, I win. Whatever, he said. See, in case you haven't noticed, coming up with snappy barbs is one of the many, many, many things I'm good at. Everyone around me knows that if they step up, they'll get smacked down again, so they rarely even try. Tim carved a piece of mystery meat with his fork, and I impaled a couple of edemic green beans on mine. School food is the only food I don't like. I mean, I eat it, though, but it's still gross. Ugh. I swear, they eat better in prison.
What time should I pick you up?
Tim asked around a mouthful. Party starts at 7, and I like to be fashionably late, so we should probably get there at 7:01.
Okay, SpongeBob, he snorted. Is Jess coming?
I looked around and spied Jess the Best sitting with Mark and a few of her geeky friends. Mark said something and she covered her mouth to hide her mushy, gushy giggle. Ah, how fast they grow up. I remember a time when she thought boys were yuck and infested with bugs. Come to think of it, I'm the one who told her that. I don't know. She was kind of waffling earlier. She thinks the place is going to be full of drugs, beer, and sex. That made Tim laugh. Seriously, being a community party, things were kept pretty PG. Maybe people did things there, but not like out in the open.
She's a dweeb.
And that earned him another shot to the guts. The air left him in a gasp and he bared his teeth in pain. Shut up, asshole. That's my sister's not a dweeb.
God, I was playing, he cried.
You don't play with an Alex Jesse. Bad things happen. I widened my eyes to communicate the severity of my warning. Bad. Bad things. He held up one hand.
Okay, sorry.
The bell rang a few minutes later, and I scarfed down the rest of my lunch.
So, pick you up at 7?
Tim asked. Yeah, 7's fine.
All right.
We kissed. Then I took my tray to the window and went to science class. The last half of the day went by slowly. And when the last bell rang at 2:45, I jumped up, shouldered everyone out of the way, and raced into the hall. Halloween party, here I come. Maybe I shouldn't. Jess sat at her desk and ran her hair anxiously through her hands like a girl milking a cow. In the light of the lamp, her face was craggy and drawn like going to a Halloween party was the most stressful thing ever. She had been sitting at her desk for nearly an hour, fretting over every little thing and every freak possibility. What if someone's smoking the devil's lettuce and I breathe it in and I get high? Huh? What then, Alex? What then? I sat on my bed with my legs crossed and threw a handful of M&Ms into my mouth. Will you relax, Jess? We're gonna bob for apples, have a cakewalk, and eat yummy snacks. That's it. Though I looked cool and unaffected on the outside, as I am wont to do, I had my own problems. Namely, my costume. Maybe it was a little too simple. I had a hat, a black dress, and a skull necklace. Understatement is not the Alex Warner way, and I was a blasted fool to think I could pull it off. I need something to bring it all together, but what? A broom? Nah, that was too basic. A hydro flask? That's all, Jess was saying. Whoops, you were talking? I had no clue what she said, so I winged it. Or maybe that's winged it? I don't know. Just calm your bitch, Jess. I swear sometimes I think you're spazzing out. Jess shot me a dirty look. Trust me, I don't. But this can go wrong a million different ways. What if someone's drinking or doing chugs and the police come? What if someone spills a beer on us and the cops smell it and think that we're drinking? Huh? We'll go to jail and Uncle Kevin and Aunt Maria will be disappointed in us. She caught her breath and was turned away, stroking her head, hair faster and harder. So disappointed. This girl is so difficult. That's not going to happen, I said with strained patience. And if by some universal gymnastics it does, you have a reputation as a good girl / teacher's pet. Mom and Dad will believe you. She pursed her lips and thought. I softened my tone. Really? We're going to have a great time. For a moment, she gazed into space, her mind working.
Then she drew a heavy sigh and nodded. Okay.
Atta girl. It was 6:28 by the clock on the nightstand, and I still didn't have anything to tie my costume together. Sigh. Guess I'll be an unorganized mess. I'm going to hit the shower, as I said, and I got up. I might be a mess, but at least I'd smell good. My BF was going to be there, and I had to be fresh and alluring. Can't do that reeking like pits and feet. Getting up, I grabbed my towel and went to the hall. Speaking of bad smells, what's that stench? I sniffed the air and gagged. Ugh, it's like mold and mildew and unwashed butt. I looked around but didn't see the source. Then surreptitiously took a whiff of my underarms. Do I offend? Whew, nope. Huh. I smelled my towel and threw up in my mouth just a little bit. Oh, when was the last time I switched this bad boy out? I racked my brain but couldn't remember. Okay, I tossed it aside and went to the linen closet for a new one. I grabbed one and jumped back in alarm. There was a face under it. What the? Then I remembered. Oh, the cool, creepy spell book that creeped Jess out so bad she banished it from our room. It called my name, and in an instant, I knew I found the one thing to make my costume pop. Covering it with another towel, I went into the bathroom and hopped in the shower. I totally meant to take the book back to the library on Monday, but hey, with me, if it's out of sight, it's likely out of mind. Good thing I didn't. Hooray for forgetting! When I was done, I got out, dried off, and got dressed. I grabbed the book on my way back to the room, and the warm, pulpy feel of it made me cringe. It hummed silently in my hand like a transformer box, and my step faltered. Ooh, that's new. It didn't do this on Saturday. But, of course, it'd tremble like unholy life now. It was Halloween, after all. Shudder. Maybe Jess was right about this thing. Nah, she's a dweeb with an anxiety disorder. What did she know? I tucked the book under my arm and went into the room and dropped it onto my bed. Jess was still at the desk, facing the mirror and putting her hair back in the super-duper teacher bun. A metal pin jutted from her mouth like a crack pipe, and I tissed. Such a shame to see a good girl go bad. Her future was so bright. 6:45. 15 minutes till Tim was there. 15 minutes until he was supposed to be here, that is. You know how girls say they'll be ready in 5, but you're still waiting like 3 hours later? Yeah, guys do that too. Only their line is, I'll be there in 10 minutes, and a week later they roll up like nothing happened. 15 minutes? Guess that gives me time to read. I cracked the book open and scanned the first page. Just said this was in English, but it was Greek to me. Maybe if Pickett's Me taught its students cursive writing like a normal school, but no. It's useless, the PTA said. It has no place in modern curriculum, they said. Whatever, I'll just look at the pictures. Turning the page, I leafed through and stopped at the end. On the inside cover, a column headed Owners of the Brook listed a dozen names, each followed by a date. The first one was 1543. My jaw dropped. There was no way this book was that old. I can see 100 years, maybe 2, but 500? Heh. That dark magic really keeps it, huh? Last time was Elie Rimpage. And her the date beside her name. She took possession of the book in 1743. That was before America was even America. For those of you keeping score at home, we were still British, and much of the country was a vast untapped wilderness filled with Indian tribes, French fur trappers, and limitless natural resources. The revolution was still 30 years away, and we wouldn't gain our independence for 40 years. Visions of plantoons, silver buckle slippers, quaint cottages, and colonial architecture swirled around me, and I drew a nostalgic sigh. Yep, those were the days. Wait, what am I talking about? No, they weren't. A thousand questions occurred to me as I stared down those names. Who were they? Were they members of the same family? Did they have a coven? How was the book passed down? I don't know about you, but when I have a question, I go to Google. I whipped my phone out and typed Ellie Rimpage into the search bar, then hit the magnifying glass. The first result, Ellie Rimpage, Wikipedia. What? She has her own wiki page? You know someone's a pretty heavy hitter when they have their own entry at Wikipedia. I clicked on it, but before I could start reading, Jess sucked a sharp intake of breath. What is that? I started and looked around, expecting to find a giant spider thing crouched in the corner and rubbing its four legs together. Trick or treat! What? That book? Oh, Jess's eyes narrowed to slits and her lips screwed up in a dour pucker. I thought you took it back. I forgot. She blew a frustrated sigh. Forgot? Yes, I forgot. It happens. Now hush. I'm trying to read something. I bent over the phone and scrolled through the page. Oh, wow. Jess hesitated a moment, torn between outrage and curiosity. What? She finally asked, the latter having won. This lady who owned the book? She's on Wikipedia. Wikipedia? I know, right? Come here. She got up and came over. I scooted to the side to make room. She was kind of rigid when she sat down and was warily eyeing the book like it might attack at any moment she looked away. She risked darting her eyes to the screen but kept the book in her line of sight. If it made one wrong move, brother, she was gone.
Read for yourself, I said.
We huddled together like two Eskimos for warmth. The article wasn't very long or detailed, meaning Ellie Rimbaugh was important, just not that important. But it didn't have to be. We got the gist. Born in a log cabin south of present-day Pickett's Mead in 1721, Ellie Rimbaugh was a milkmaid, an all-around normal teenage girl for her time. She did the wash, swept, cooked, didn't vote, and went to bed at 7 p.m. One day, she was caught with a farmhand. And with... You know what I'm talking about. Since it was 1739, doing that kind of thing before marriage was a big no-no, the townspeople were scandalized and banished her from the community.
Even her family disowned her.
Jeez, all that for getting a little nookie? I know it was the late 1700s, but wow. With nowhere else to go, she lived in a cave outside of town. How she survived the harsh Virginia winters, I'll never know. In the fall of 1744, a little boy went missing from town. Ellie, being the local hermit slash witch slash weirdo, was immediately suspected and arrested. After a brief trial, read, probably unfair, Ellie was convicted of consorting with Satan and of banishing that kid for dark and unholy purposes. You don't want to know what happened next. It involves fire and a steak and not the kind you eat. But seriously, as I read Ellie Renberg's fate, I could almost feel the fire licking my body and taste the woody smoke in my lungs. Here's a secret. I think burning alive would be the worst way to die. Just imagine the heat, your flesh beginning to bubble and blister, the clawing panic as the fire rises around you, choking the air, scalding your face, consuming you in its deadly embrace. It literally sends shivers down my spine. Jess and I looked at each other from her ashy face and flaring nostrils. She was just as shaken as I was. Okay, Jess held up her four fingers. I'm officially creeped out. Get this book away from me. I couldn't blame her for that sentiment. However, it's just a book. I doubt it this is even hers, I said. It's probably a reproduction or something, or a hoax. Look at this thing and tell me it's 500 years old. Jerking her head away, Jess jumped to her feet. I'm not looking at that thing. Get it away, it's yuck. I looked at it and frowned. Hoax or not, Ellie Renberg certainly lived and was said to have powers. And her name was right there in faded ink. And what's my middle name? Even so, a voice in the back of my head told me Jess was right. In all honesty, she has a far better head on her shoulders than me. And I should really, really listen to her. I opened my mouth, but a muffled honking cut me off. Ooh, Tim's here! I got to my feet and tucked the book under my arm. Come on, Jess! Our gentleman callers have arrived! But I was already gone. It was Halloween night. My BF was here, and we were going to party hardy. Everything else was whoosh right out the window. In the living room, Dad sat in his recliner, with his feet up and can of Coke between his legs, and Mom perched at the edge of the couch, arms folded over her chest. On TV, the nightly news played Donald Trump waving his middle finger at the press while Mike Pence facepalmed. Dad sniffed, pointed the remote at the screen, and changed to the AMC, where the Night of the Living Dead was starting. They're coming to get you, Jess, I intoned. The horn honked again, forestalling her reply. Really? Mom asked testily. They're not going to come to the door?
They know better than that, Dad said.
Mom blew a raspberry. You won't do anything. Dad lifted his brow.
I can go get my gun if you want.
Before Mom could reply, I hooked a thumb at the door. Okay, we're going to head out.
Have fun, Dad called.
Be careful, Mom said. She jabbed a stern finger at me and lowered her eyebrows, which meant whatever she was going to say next, she meant it. No later than 10. All right. Jess, Mom added. Keep her in line. Jess, the boss of me, as freaking if. Outside, cool purple twilight inched toward the night, and a heatless wind slipped through the trees. Gangs of kids in costumes of every kind, ooh, nice Hulk, roamed up and down the sidewalk with empty sacks. There was a princess, a ghost, a little Dracula, and even someone in a full Iron Man suit. Looking good, Stark. Tim's car, a battered blue Oldsmobile Cutlass he bought on the cheap from his grandma, sat at the curb, its one good headlight dim and sickly. I pick on him mercilessly about that car, but, well, I can. I get him everywhere else. I can't get him there, because at least he has a ride. The harsh orange glare of the street lamp highlighted the many dings and rust spots, flecking the paint job and the black-lit interior, reducing Tim and Mark to silhouettes. Tim behind the wheel and Mark in the passenger seat, ramrod straight like he had a stick up his butt, swinging the book back and forth like a happy elf with her lunch pail. I brushed past Jess and went down the walkway. Alex is first, I tossed over my shoulder. I shifted the book from my left hand and opened the back door and then slid in. The smell of McDonald's grabbed me by the front of my dress and shoved its tongue down my throat. What, no dinner first? I retched a little. This car reeks, I moaned. Tim sighed. I sprayed Febreze before I came over. Jess climbed in beside me and pulled the door closed behind her. Hey, she said to Mark. Hey, he said without turning. You look nice. You haven't even seen me, she said, flattered. I don't need to. You always look nice. She giggled. Ooh, good one, Mark. Tim put the car in drive and pulled away from the curb. I waited a few seconds, then cleared my throat. He glanced questioningly in the rearview mirror. Aren't you going to compliment me? I asked. You look nice, I sighed. What? It's not the same when I have to tell you. Sorry. Boys, you can't live with them. You can't dunk their heads in water and then dispose of their wet, lifeless corpses in the street as a warning to others. Where's your costume? I asked. I'm wearing it. A ball of light flicked across the car. Tim wore a pair of dark overalls. Your work clothes? No. We pulled to a red light and he pulled a mask over his face, then turned. Oh, Michael Myers, I said, like greeting an old friend. What about you, Marky Mark? What are you dressed up as? He reached into the breast pocket of his izod, yanked something out and shoved it in his mouth. He turned and gave me a big, fangy smile. Vampire, I nodded. A classic. I stole a sidelong glance at Jess, and an evil smile carved across my face. Should I say it? No, it was way too risque. Then again, I do enjoy pushing the envelope. Maybe you can use those on Jesse later. Jess shot me daggers. Oh! And though I couldn't be sure on the account of the darkness, I feel her face turned fire truck red. I'd rather not, Mark said, missing my meaning entirely. I don't really drink blood. You don't say. My hand brushed something in it, and I looked down at the seat. There was the book, face as frozen in torment as ever. Okay. So you guys, the other day at the library, I found this. I held it up and Tim and Mark both glanced at it. I couldn't see Jess, but I could feel her pawing. Opened the cover and flipped a few pages. It's a spell book. It belonged to a real live witch. Yeah? Tim asked, mildly interested. Yeah, I looked her up on Wikipedia. He turned to look at me, eyebrows raised. Wikipedia? You know she's legit if she's on Wikipedia. Exactly. I told him and Mark everything, starting with the finding the book in the storeroom and ending with what I dug up about Ellie Rimbaugh.
Wait, Tim said. That thing's bound in human flesh?
Alex? Firm, demanding. No, no. I doubted it really was, but I honestly couldn't be sure. Like I said earlier, that book was not 500 years old. And if it was really wrapped in skin, that skin would have decayed and rotted a long time ago. I said as much, and he spared me a quick, uneasy glance. Don't spag out. It's really not skin. It's creepy, whatever it is, Jess shuddered. You're all lightweights. 2 miles later, we turned into Pine Street and Tim hit the brake. He, Jess, and Mark were wearing their seatbelts. I was not. And the force of the stop flung me into the back of Tim's seat. Ow! I cried, more in surprise than pain. Why did you? Then I saw it. The Brenners was ahead on the right. A virtual palace with dormers, marble columns, French doors, and decorations in the yard. A fleet of cop cars, blue light streaking the night, sat at the curb. And people in costumes knelt and sat on the front lawn, some in handcuffs and others looking ashamed. A couple of cops in the black stood over them, one looking at a clipboard and the other shoving someone into the back of the car. The perp was tall, thin, and balding with glasses. I was pretty sure that was Alton Brenner. What's going on? Oh my God. Jess breathed, horrified. Tim sighed and hung his head, and Mark silently counted. 10 cops. Another squad car appeared and parked, and 2 more got out. 12 cops. Throwing the car in reverse, Tim backed up, and my heart clutched. But the party.
Party's canceled, he said bitterly.
Great. I blew a puff of air and slumped back against my seat. My lip may or may not have stuck sullenly out. I don't know. I was certainly upset enough.
I knew it, Jess said. I knew something was going to go wrong. I knew there'd be illegal activity. I knew it. I knew it. I knew it.
She shuddered and hugged herself like she was cold. Thank God it happened before we got here. Well, what could I say? Jess was right. I told her this party was on the level, and it wasn't, which made me look really bad. Even worse, though, no party. No bobbing for apples, no seasonal music, no dancing, no cakewalks, no pin the tail on the donkey, no punch, no snacks, no costumes, nothing. Halloween was officially ruined.
What now? Tim asked and looked me in the mirror.
My stomach rumbled. Well, first I'm hungry, then, I trailed off. What? It was Halloween, and on Halloween you do Halloween things. In Pickett's Mead you had the Brenners' party or trick-or-treating, and that was pretty much it, except for the haunted house at the volunteer fire department, but that stank. It was all the same setup and same cheap jump scares every year.
Yawn.
And as much as I like free candy, I'm just a little too old for trick-or-treating. Just ask the bigots in this town.
Durr, you're 15, durr, you're too old, durr. Stop shoving little kids out of the way to be first, durr.
All the way to White Castle, I racked my brain for something fun and festive we could do. We could throw eggs in soap windows, but for one thing, it was a little too early for that. Everyone was still awake. And for two, I might be a lot of things, but I'm not a hoodlum. Tim crept into the order window and got a sack of burgers, then pulled to the exit. Clock's ticking, Alex. Tight, gripping claustrophobia closed around my chest, and the prospect of missing Halloween, my favorite holiday, made me want to hyperventilate, Jesse style.
We could go to the Jesus Ween party at the Methodist church, Mark offered.
Ugh, no. I want Halloween, not some evangelical knockoff. No offense to my Christian friends. I mean, Jesus is a fine boy and all, but his parties aren't really my cup of joe. Place was probably a metaphorical light bulb appeared over my head. The cemetery. Jess's face fell.
The cemetery?
Tim asked incredulously.
Why the cemetery? Mark put in.
Poof, why the cemetery? What a normie. It's quiet, it's dark, and it's spooky. Perfect for a little Halloween reverie.
I don't want to go to the cemetery, Jess stammered.
Sigh, of course not. Jess has to be the wet blanket of the group. I don't know, Tim said and turned right the direction of the cemetery. That sounds kind of boring.
We could tell scary stories, I said, and hang out. Come on, it'll be fun.
The way I saw it, hanging out among the tombstones and telling scary stories was all we had. It wasn't optimal, but, you know, we could turn it into a good time.
Tim hummed thoughtfully.
I really don't want to do this, Jess said.
Why? Scared of the living dead?
No, it's just...
She searched for a convincing excuse, because she was totally afraid of the living dead.
It's disrespectful.
No, it's not. It's not like we're going to have a satanic orgy or desecrate graves or anything. We're just going to go chill.
Jess pursed her lips. We're going to do this, aren't we?
Ten minutes later, we pulled up to the main gate of Westvale Cemetery, a vast, flat, tabletop parcel of land separating the river from Westvale Drive and enclosed by a wrought iron fence. Standing in front of the archway leading you in, you could look down Main Street and see the sparse lights of the town. A few houses with big yards salted Westvale and the lamps were spaced far apart, leaving the night to hold court. Overhead, stars splashed the dark sky like diamond chips on black velvet, and a crisp breeze stirred the trees. Tim parked at the curb and cut the engine. Shadows filled the car, and seeing Jess's face 5 inches from my own was nigh on impossible.
Just for the record, she said, and chopped the air for emphasis. I don't like this.
I opened my door and got out. Don't be a spoil sport.
Tim and Mark followed, and Jess hesitated for a moment, but then, reluctantly, brought up the rear. We stood next to the car and looked up at the gate.
Westvale, read the letters over the arch. A cold gust of wind swept from the south and Jess hugged herself.
I didn't think I needed my jacket.
The glare she gave me made her comment feel like an accusation. Mark put his arm around her shoulders and she gracefully leaned into him like a warmth-sucking vampire.
There's a blanket in the trunk.
Tim said and went around the back, opened the trunk, then came back with a heavy wool comforter that he handed her before turning to me.
How are we going to get in there?
A thick chain was threaded through the bars and padlock in place. Huh. That might present a problem. I walked over, bent, and studied it closely. He looked formidable. I don't know. But it's not looking good, guys. I reached out and touched it. Two things happened at once. One, shock went up my left arm, traveled through my chest like an electric gas bubble, and went down my right arm. Two, the padlock popped open and fell to the ground. Youch! I ripped my hand back. Even though it didn't hurt, it just kind of tingled. What? Tim asked, worried. I looked at my fingertips and flexed them slowly. They looked and felt normal. That lock shocked me. I kicked it aside. Must be corroded or something. I stripped the chain out with a clang and dropped it on the ground. It landed on it with a hollow thump and kicked up a little pust of dust. Maybe we shouldn't, Jess said. This is technically breaking and entering. No, it's not. I opened the gate and the rusted hinges shrieked like an eerie banshee cried, making me wince. Like I said, Jess has a good head on her shoulders. Perhaps I should listen to her. Then again, Halloween. That decided me. Come on, guys. Follow me to some fun. A gravel road bisected the ground, a narrow sliver to the left, and a broad plain broken by the trees and headstones on the right. Westvale had been Pickett Mead's primary burying place. In one form or another since the 1850s, and as such, it was kind of packed. The slabs, crypts, vaults, and gravestones were crammed together closer to the entrance. The graves were newer, but further back you went, the older they got. Crooked, slanted, covered in slime, moss, and grit, the writing on their faces had largely been worn by years and the elements. The ground in front of a few was sunken and uneven. It took me a minute to realize. It was probably because the coffins below had collapsed. Creepy. An owl hooted from a high branch and just let out a squeaky eep, then moaned, "Let's go!" "But we just got here," I said. "I want to go home." It came in a fearful rush that made her sound like a little girl in a scary place. She hugged herself tightly and Mark pulled her close with a whispered word of encouragement I didn't catch. Tim moseyed along with his hands in his pockets, looking curiously around like he'd never seen a cemetery before. The moon crested over the rim of the earth, and a shaft of silverly light fell on an inexplicable wide spot between two rows. Just far enough from the surrounding stones to make it perfect for chilling without being on top of the dead. The grass was thick, dry, and soft. That sounded dirty. Getting over, I dropped to my butt and then crossed my legs. I patted the ground next to me. "Come on, Jess, I'll protect you from the living dead." Jess sputtered. "Don't talk about them." "Why not?" it asked. "Scared?" Throwing my head back, I deepened my voice. "They're not coming to get you, Jess. Look, there goes one of them now in the opposite direction." Poor Jess looked like a leaf. Don't say that. She got stiffly to her knees and sat and cowered against Bark for comfort. Tim sank to his butt beside me and drew his knees to his chest. The moon soared into the sky like a vampire waking from infernal slumber, and its cold light bathed the cemetery. It was so bright I could see halfway across the field. Something moved, and a thrill went up my leg like my name was Chris Matthews. That means max spookiness has been achieved. Give yourself a pat on the back, Alex. I went to do that, but there was something in my left hand, something fleshless and booky. Huh. Have I really been carrying this thing the whole time? I tried to remember picking it up, holding it on the walk over, but couldn't. Okay, now max spookiness has been achieved. From Tim's exasperated sigh, he noticed the book. Did you really have to bring that? It was in my hand. I totally forgot about it. I set it on the grass in front of me, slapped my hands on my knees, and looked around at my squad. Jess, pale and shaking. Mark, looking around, fascinating tree. And Tim sneering at the book like it burned his crops and salted the earth so nothing would ever grow again. You act like it's the worst thing ever. Tim favored me with a toxic sidelong glance. Alex, it's covered in human skin. Oh, this again. As the president might say, you, sir, are fake news. It's not really human skin. It's not. Here, feel. I realized even as those words left my mouth that the cover did feel like warm, living skin, and that Tim feeling it probably wouldn't help my case. Thankfully, he politely declined. Get that shit away from me. I want to hold it, Mark said. Ah, Mark, my man. You cut, don't touch it, Jess said. Alex, please get rid of that book. The beseeching hilt in her voice was raw and abject. I will tomorrow, okay? But come on, it's Halloween, and Sheriff Brackett says everyone's entitled to one good scare. You don't want to let Sheriff Brackett down, do you? I don't even know who that is, Jess snapped. Her patience was wearing thin, and one good prod would rip it to shreds, like one ply toilet paper. Jess drew her head back. I don't care. I don't like being scared, and I don't like that book. Yeah, I'm not into it either, Tim concurred. All right, real talk. I was starting to get offended. Don't ask me why. I know it doesn't make sense, but they're baby-fied belly aching irked me. Maybe I was mad over the partying being ruined. Maybe I was taking it personally when I shouldn't have. Or maybe the book was even then exerting some kind of sick pull over me. Or maybe it was a combination of all those things. Or maybe it was none of them. Whatever it may or may not have been, my face flushed hotly and my chest roiled. Bunch of belly-aching babies. If they think this book was creepy now, just you wait, buddy. I struggled to my feet and stood over them like an axe-wielding psycho. I tried to reason with you, but no, I opened the cover. My name is Alex Warner, and I am a real-life witch now. This book is mine, and I'm going to curse all of you with it. Tim rolled his eyes. Mark stared blankly, and Jess clenched her jaw. I opened the cover, and a gust of wind caught the pages. Then they fluttered back into place. I read the text. Ooh, perfect. Latin, I said nastily. The language of Satan. I threw up one hand air quotes. Knock it off, Alex, Jess said firmly. It's too late for that, Jessica. You mocked me, and now you will pay by becoming a frog and thinking about what you've done. Squinting to see in the dim moonlight, I started to read. Populo mortui resurgent, aggressus est der terra. The words felt strange and clunky on my lips, and I stumbled in a few places. I tried to sound them out. Voco vos ad vigivarius. A sudden wind gushed through the cemetery, stirring my hair. Redire ad hoc terra. The words came easier, as though I wasn't speaking Latin for the first time ever. The book seemed to pulse in my hands like a beating heart, and the energy surged through my veins. Another gust, this one stronger, my dress and hair rippled around me, and the edge of the page blew back and forth. My heart slammed against my ribs, and I tried to stop, but some outside force pulled me through the right. Finit ex momentis, excate. Fiam somo et iscate.
My voice echoed in my head and I realized I was numb. Fear flooded my chest, but the otherworldly exhilaration was stronger. I felt big, powerful, and maybe, I'm ashamed to say, a little sexually excited. Jess screamed for the first time ever, Mark's features arranged in the shape of a human emotion. He looked scared. Alex! Tim cried, barely audible over the shrieking wind. Trees swayed, leaves pelted my back and stuck in my hair. Stop! I'm trying. Instead, more Latin spilled from my mouth. Surgere nuc, ego spugnus te noctre pertinent ante. Jess buried her face in Mark's chest. Tim held his arm up to shield himself from the wind. Mark turned his head. A long, crashing peal of thunder rent the night, and lightning cracked the sky. A tremor ran through the ground, and my mind screamed at me to stop. For the love of God, stop it! My lips moved on their own. My mouth spoke, but not my voice. This voice was deeper, darker, and coming out. It felt almost like it was being dragged, a fish at the end of a hook. Vene et acepe nocte excarte excarte. Like throwing a switch, it stopped. The thunder rumbled to silence. The lightning faded and the wind died down. The book was red hot and shaking from side to side like a small vicious animal. And with a cry, part pain and part alarm, I threw it down and fell back a step. My feet tangled in the hem of my dress and I landed on my butt so hard the air drove from my lungs. Jess cowered into Mark, terrified whimpers rising from her hitching chest, and Tim lay curled in the grass like a baby in the womb. I'm pretty sure he would have been crying for mommy if his vocal cords weren't frozen. Me? I sat there in shock, cast, for once, into total silence. I know I can be kind of silly and maybe even a little annoying, but right then and there, all of that dried up. What the hell just happened? I darted my eyes to the book. Still. Dark. But somehow, I could feel its presence as though it weren't an inanimate object but a person.
What the hell, Alex?
Tim groaned shakily. That wasn't me.
Yes, it was, Mark said.
Honest, I... Something brushed my hand and I yanked it away with a gasp. I turned my head but didn't see anything. Whew. On edge.
It was the book.
I told you it was yuck, Jess said. I know, God, I know you were so right, Jess. I'm sorry. But before I could say that or anything else, a flicker of movement caught my attention. I turned again just as a clump of earth moved aside and a gray, withered hand emerged. My heart dropped into my stomach and my mouth fell open. Long, bony fingers quested across the grass like the world's most petrifying spider. And I stared at them in the skull-cracking horror. Yellowed bone showed through the hand's tatters of flesh, and a bug scuttled over the one knotted knuckle.
Zombie.
The world around me dimmed, and my mind came this close to breaking. No, that's not possible. Zombies aren't real. Zombies aren't real. The hand lifted higher, turning slightly left to write as if tasting the cool night air for the first time. Hey, I remember this.
Holy shit!
Tim jumped up and, like a startled cat, and nearly fell over Jess and Mark. An arm was wrenching out of the ground where he had just been lying, and the hand was opening and closing, as if to say, "I know you're there, Buster. Come here." My paralysis broke, and with throat-rending screeches, I rocketed to my feet and spun around. As soon as my brain registered what my eyes were seeing, I really, really, really wished I hadn't turned around. They were everywhere. Arms and torsos struggled from the earth. Dark figures shambled between the rows. Nearby, a woman looking like something from the live pulled herself out of her grave, her ratty burial dress clinging to her emaciated form. Farther away, a man in a dusty suit used a headstone to draw himself to a standing position. Most of the flesh had rotted away from his skull, and one milky eye stared out from a yawning socket with malevolent life. Our gazes met, and the look of hungry excitement that flickered across his vision stopped my heart in its tracks. "Oh my God!" Jess wailed as she rocketed to on her butt, pinched forward, hit the ground face first, and flailed like a no-limbed woman in an ass-kicking contest. Mark pulled her to her feet, and they both staggered. Tim stared down at the ghoul before him with a wide-eyed shock. It had worked itself free to the waist and snatched at him with low, doggish growl. Others were coming, all skeletal faces, sparse hair, gaping eye sockets, squirming maggots' teeth, lipless smiles. Their voices came together in a hellish din of moaning. The sound alone was enough to shove me back. Jess was sobbing, and Mark looked quickly around for a weapon, but there was nothing. I realized I was hyperventilating. I tried to calm myself down, but a hand grabbed my ankle, and I let loose a terrified howl instead. A skeleton lay prone in front of me, its frame stripped of skin, blood, muscle, and everything else that makes a person. It lifted its head, and impossibly, it had eyes. Blue, bloodshot, and moist with intelligence. My body froze, and hysteria burst inside my head like a dying heart. Suddenly, Tim was beside me, his foot falling in a deadly arc. It hit the skull, and with a wet, sickening snap, it came off and rolled away. "Motherfucker," it called. "God, can they talk? Come on." Tim wrenched me back, and we fell in beside Mark and Jess, a tiny, huddled group facing 1,000 enemies in various states of decay. They lurched, crawled, hobbled. One even used a branch as a rudimentary cane. They hissed, spat, and mewed like animals. Even though I was seeing it, I couldn't believe it. Jess hugged herself and bent at the waist, crying harder now. Mark took her by the arm and slowly led her away, as if afraid to make any sudden moves. Something grabbed me and I screamed, but it was only Tim. "Come on!" I turned to run, but a zombie was there, and I went stiff. My height, maybe an inch shorter, it had been a man in real life. Rags hung from its arm in shreds, and its slime-coated ribcage stuck out from its bluish skin. Tufts of wispy white hair clung to its skull, and its empty eye sockets festered with worms. Tim put his arm protectively around me, but made no move to fight the thing. So much for bravery, huh? The thing leaned over, and as one, Tim and I leaned back. Sniffing the air, the zombie made an obscene "om" sound. "Your brain smells spicy, like a fajita." Wait, what did he say? Okay, wow, that was really racist.
its maggot-bitten tongue swiped over what passed for its upper lip.
I don't think he cares about being politically correct, Tim said through his teeth.
Jess screamed, and she and Mark started to run. Tim grabbed my hand, pulled me away from the zombie, and together we ran too.
Ghoul stumbled after us, arms raised and teeth gnashing, some so close I could feel their fingertips grazing my arm, which only made me run faster. Ahead, Jess and Mark made it through the gate. A few zombies staggered into our way, but we swung wide. A hot stitch flared in my side and fire filled my lungs, but I ignored it. My survival instincts were in full gear and absolutely nothing else mattered. I got through the gate first and Tim a split second later. Jess and Mark ran down the middle of Maine toward town and their feet flying over the pavement. The hellish sounds of a tortured multitude rose behind us. Hey, dumbasses, get in the car, I yelled. Someone snagged my dress and whipped me around, a mountain of cold, decomposing flesh clad in white, tall tea. I looked up, and a dead face sneered down at me. 3 years is a long time, but the creature before me kept remarkably well. So well that I recognized him instantly. Cornrows Grill. Wickle, the white rapper. And he was much taller in person.
What the fuck is y'all doing in my cemetery? He demanded.
The zombies were almost at the gate, a wall of dark faces and even darker desire.
Hey,
Tim started, but Wilco cut him off.
Shut your ass up.
Ain't no one talking to you. I'm talking to Lil Miss Bitch over here. Tim took a threatening step forward, and in a flash, Wilco pushed me away and grabbed him around the throat with both hands, Wayne Brady style. Tim's eyes bulged and his lips smooshed together. Wilco held him off the ground, and his feet kicked back and forth.
What?
Nico asked and shook him like a crocodile with his prey.
What?
The vanguard reached the gate, and the living dead began to spill out into the night. The ones at the head of the pack were mere feet away. I turned to Wilco, terror clawing my heart. If I didn't do something, Tim was, it hit me. And summoning all my strength, I threw a punch at Wickle's balls. His eyes widened and his grip on Tim released. He dropped to one knee and shuddered in agony.
Bitch!
He panted.
You done fucked up now.
When he looked up, though, we were already gone.
Shit, man, are they gonna get out of there? Ah, this one's so fucked up. Like, how do you accidentally raise the dead? Oh, that was so messed up. Okay, anyway, well, you heard it too. What do you think? Was it scary enough? Or better question, can you do better? Can you scare the laughter out of me? Now for the details. Today's writing prompt is inspired by my new increase in those dreams that just don't sit well with you when you're awake. Tell me about the worst nightmare you remember. Use that sentence as inspiration or those exact words in your story. Either way, let them lead you to your literal nightmare in this case. The idea is scary enough, but what you do with it can send it over the edge. Dreams are an unlimited resource of possibilities. What made the nightmare so scary? Was there a smell associated with it? Describe the surroundings. Were they concrete or ever-changing? I'm dying to know.
Once you're able to squeeze that story out of your brain, send it to my email for a chance to have it come to life on this podcast. If you don't know my email, just check out the website. Links to my email and all my social media are on the website, as well as so much more. What is the website, you ask? That's easy. It's just the name of the podcast with the .com at the end. That's dimlightanxiety.com. Speaking of stories, let's give one final shout out to the fabulous writer you can find on Reddit under the username Jubrus. Check out the description for the spelling. If you enjoyed this story and or today's episode, please give me a like, follow, subscribe, review on any platform you use to listen to today's episode. Just something as simple as that really helps these writers get the attention they deserve. If you are feeling really passionate about this podcast, tell your friends. Tell your friends' friends. Shit, tell a stranger. Let them all leave laughing scared. Don't forget that the next episode will come out next month on the 13th, if everything goes to plan. We have a different kind of episode for you next month. There will actually be the third part of the story as well as a bonus story, almost like a whole nother episode, just to keep you on your toes. All right, I think that about covers it. Well, mostly, we still have the taste of what is to come next month. Enjoy, if you dare. The banging grew louder as a half dozen hands beat against the door in the side of the house. Mark returned holding an assault rifle so wicked and intimidating looking that describing it too well would probably give you PTSD. Bullets struck the support beams holding up the porch roof, ripped a zombie's face half off, sent another falling back over the railing, and blew out the throat of a woman with one eye. Screaming and falling over themselves to escape, the others scattered like roaches. Still, the incessant knocking and pounding continued. I declare this meeting of the Guild with Dim Light Anxiety closed. And please, don't read Latin from a curious book. But if you do, live to tell me the tale. Until next month, creepy real! This podcast does not condone any physical harm on yourself or others. These are fictional stories intended only for entertainment.